Hey folks, hope you're well. This is Jim Carroll saying hello and welcome you to the latest Bantercast, the weekly podcast from the team behind the Banter series of talks and events. At Banter, we put on events in spaces and venues of all sizes and shapes up and down the country. We invite a range of people to come along to talk to us about their lives, tell us stories, and discuss various topics and themes. We record what happens in the room and then we podcast the results. The talk which drew the biggest crowds to the Banter tent at Bloom in the Phoenix Park last year was probably the crowd of this one, our encounter with happy pairs David and Stephen Flynn. It was the second time that we've spoken to the Greystones food twins, and though there were no handstands on this occasion, there were plenty of insights about their story to date.
Do we sit or stand, Jim?
Yep. No, sit down on the sofa.
Okay, great.
Sit down, take it easy. No, you mean we're going to record a podcast.
We're going to record a podcast.
Yeah, we're going to record a podcast. Because last year, see, the two of you came here last year, right? And you were here as part of a panel. And I can't remember the third person on the panel. He didn't get a word in edgeways. Two of you took over. There was so much electricity in the room that the PA shorted.
Uh-oh.
But like this year, basically, because you're selling the book, because The World of Happy Pair, we decided it'd be a good idea to bring you back and do the full Happy Pair interview. And
woo!
That was very good, Dave.
I just had to express the excitement.
Well, I want to take it right back to Greystones in the old days. When you were kids growing up in Greystones, what was your relationship with food like back then?
Oh, we were a pair of monkeys. We just ate whatever was going, you know, ham and cheese sandwiches and, you know cornflakes for brekkie.
When the bread was a bit stale, you'd have a bag of crisps, you know, with the ham and cheese.
Stinger bars, you know, when you had 10p, you bought a Stinger bar, you know, or Champ bars or whatever. You know, it was really just same as normal people, same as everyone, you know.
So, like, you know, that was at home. So did you eat out? Did your parents take you to eat out?
Probably down to the burger.
Probably not that much because it was four boys. I'd say it was very difficult to take us all out.
Very expensive.
I'd say
expensive.
And to control us. You know,
the way. Four boys. I remember we were kicked out of lots of places. You know, four boys. A lot of energy in a room, you know.
Okay, so like, you know, then after you leave school, you go on to UCD and you're studying UCD. Was your kind of like diet in UCD your standard student fare?
Oh, yeah, anything that was cheap and just that would fill you up.
I think I used to bring three ham and cheese sandwiches, you know, three double-decker ham and cheese sandwiches. That was it. That was lunch.
And the most thing you
couple
just want...
Kind of, and a banana,
you
probably.
Were mostly interested in just getting drunk and chasing women. That was really... That was really where it was at. We were pretty crude.
It's funny you say that.
Because we went to an all-boys school, and did anyone... Well, maybe some of the men went to an all-boys school.
Single-sex school.
Single-sex school maybe sounds more appropriate.
There's a great quote. I think it's you, Stephen. This is a great quote for
this
you.
This was me, wow.
Yeah, we left as disillusioned meatheads. We left UCD as disillusioned meatheads. Rugby playing, women chasing jocks. We came back from our trip as long-haired, vegetarian, organic, rabbit food munching, trinket wearing, herbal tea drinking hippie freaks. Okay, let's talk about the change then. You know, when you give that
the
quote,
moment, the transformation.
What was the transformation? When did it happen?
I think it kind of happened. A friend Tommy Kelly was he was turning 40. I think he was turning 50 or 40,
and it was a family friend. He was turning 50, and he said,
"Do you want to do a marathon?" So I was like, "Okay, great idea." And at the time, we'd kind of finished college. Is that better? Sorry.
Yeah.
At the time, we'd finished college, and we didn't really know what we wanted to do. And Mom bought us a present. She bought us a kind of a train ticket to go Interrail. And well done, lads! You made it through college. You're still doing all right.
You can now go get drunk around Europe and chase women around Europe. You know, well, that was all we were thinking of. Mom probably didn't think we were going to do that. We were going to be going looking at culture things,
going to museums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we kind of went around Europe and got drunk and did our best to meet, you know,
do our thing.
But we were
meant to be training for a marathon, and I guess we were staying up too late.
Where was the marathon on?
It was in Dublin.
It was the Dublin City Marathon, so it was October. The end of October, and I think we were going travelling in August. We'd gone getting drunk around Europe and trying to train at 30 degrees temperature. It just wasn't really happening.
And running 20 miles, and you know, you'd been up till 4 a.m. and it was a bit of a mess. So we came back and decided, right, we're doing this marathon, we've 1 month to go, let's try this thing called detox. Back about, I don't know, was it 14 years? I don't know, it was a while ago anyway.
15 years ago.
15 years ago.
Yeah,
and, you know, the World Wide Web was just starting and Dad was way ahead of the curve. He had a 514K, you know, dial-in modem. We went up and used the AltaVista browser, you know, typed in
Lycos,
detox.
I think it was Lycos.
Lycos or something like that. Little came up. You know, there was detox. It wasn't really a thing that was happening. So we went down to the library, you know, asked the library, do you have any books on detox? And they didn't really have any. And so I was like, right, well, let's start simple. So let's change white bread for brown bread. Let's try eating porridge instead of cornflakes. And sure, let's try giving booze for a month.
Yeah, the big thing was giving up booze. You know, that was the big thing.
Okay. So, like, I mean, did that work in terms of the marathon? What were your marathon times like?
Actually, we won it.
I think we did it in about 4 hours.
We beat four, three something.
I don't know what it was. Three something.
Okay, you know, it was nothing amazing, but we did it, and we were delighted and chuffed, and it went well, and we felt great.
Okay, you felt great.
Yeah, good. And then I guess we realized we had a bit more money in our pocket, so it was like, okay, let's see. It was the end of October, so it was like, okay, let's see if we can keep this up till Christmas. You know, keep not drinking till Christmas. Kind of keep eating this healthy food and see what happens. You know, a total experiment. And then it came to Christmas, you know, it was meeting all the lads from school. You know, here we were, you know, pack of wolves, going to go get hammered. You know, this was it. We were 21 and we went in, I think it was Thunder Road Cafe. We were going meeting.
Anyone know it in Temple Bar?
Thunder Road.
Flashy place.
And there was probably like 20 lads, you know, 20. These were rugby playing. You know, it was like a pack of cavemen meeting up, you know, in the best sense of the word. And we all the pints were poured. It was like, oh, you know, it was a lot of that kind of energy. And cheered the pints, and we had our first glug of it. And whatever way, neither of us managed to finish our pints. We ended up getting slagged the whole night, and we were boating the last train home. Something had changed.
Okay, so something had changed. That metamorphosis, you decided to train for the marathon properly, sweat it out, yeah, and switch to whole foods, switch to proper foods. That was the change. Did you, like, you know, when you talk to your mates about that at that particular time, do they understand what you're on about?
Well, you know, a bunch of lads who are drinking, you don't want to talk.
Can I go?
They're not really interested in that. They just want to take the piss out of you, like.
That was
okay,
great.
You go, sorry.
Okay, yeah. But, you know, you finished college. And did anyone study business in college? No one. Okay. Yay! One fellow's going to play. Thanks for interacting. Well, I studied business, and you're kind of sold the American dream. You know, he who makes the most amount of money will win. You should be an investment banker because they make loads of money. That's a great job.
Or a stockbroker.
Stockbroker, yeah.
That was kind of the dream, you know.
You know, or be an accountant. That's solid. And it's kind of like, you know, there has to be more to life than this kind of American dream and making a load of money and having a big house and a big car, and then you'll be happy because you're successful. And, you know, we were kind of a bit disillusioned with that kind of ideal or that paradigm sold to us. And I guess true... doing that, it was kind of like, right, I don't know what I want to do, and I'm interested in this
health thing,
and decided, right, I'm getting a one-way ticket to Vancouver, and I'm not coming back until I know what I'm into.
So why'd you pick Vancouver?
When we were traveling around Europe, I met a whole load of guys who were really fun and up for doing just silly stuff, and they weren't into drinking, and it was weird. I'd never met guys who socialized without getting drunk. It was a whole different, it was like meeting a different form of human, you know, that way. You can actually go out and not get drunk and have fun. You know, because in Ireland, it's... Well, okay, I'll stop ranting, sorry.
No,
When we were in our experience, that was what it was.
Well, going to an all-boys school and that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so like you were out in Vancouver. Where did you go at that stage, David?
I was playing off two in golf, so I decided I want to go be a golf pro, so I wanted to have a punt at it. So I went to... It was January, so I bought a ticket to South Africa. You know, it was winter, so South Africa was summer. I wanted to go over and try and be a golf pro. So I joined Stellenbosch Golf Club. Went over there by myself, and within 3 weeks, I'd sold my golf clubs. I'm throwing away the dream.
Wow. Okay. All right. So while he's out in Vancouver, he's hanging with like mean people who are not drinking, people who are living the clean life.
Yeah.
You're in South Africa playing golf.
Like, yeah.
Were you hanging in the golf club, or were you suddenly realizing you didn't want to go down the road?
I think I was kind of doing my own thing, and I think it was the first time I hadn't lived at home with mom cooking for us. You know, we were good Irish lads. We lived at home right the way through. We ate with mom. Sir, you know, good lads. Thanks, mom. Thanks a million. Lovely, great dinner. And it was the first time being away, so it was the first time we'd ever cooked for ourselves. And I don't know, I just didn't want to buy meat. I didn't want to, like, something had changed.
And then for me, I guess I was in Vancouver for a week and then decided I'm going to go up to Whistler. Because I remember when I was 16, I'd watched some movie where there was loads of parties and pretty women. I thought, that's a good place to start. So I went up to Whistler. There's a common theme, sorry. But I went up to Whistler, and it's, if anyone doesn't know Whistler, it's kind of a really cool ski resort, and it's kind of a real party place and very lovely place. And I didn't have much money, but I knew a guy from Greystones, Connor, and he said I could sleep on his floor. So I was sleeping on his floor, and there was a fella in the apartment called Adrian, and he was from Australia. And going to an all-boys school, I had never really met a vegetarian. And if I did, they were bullied, you know. So Adrian was from Australia, and he was a surfer, and he was a cool dude. And I was 21, highly impressionable. And I was like, you're a vegetarian? Wow. What do you eat like? You know, the way it was like meeting someone, you know, a different creature. And he was eating sweet potatoes and coconut milk. And I'd never met a sweet potato, and I didn't know what coconut milk was. You know, because I ate whatever mom cooked. And it was like, wow, a sweet potato. And you're making a sweet potato and coconut soup with, what's that, a lentil? What's a lentil? You know, to me, it was all just weird hippie food. And I thought it was amazing. And I ate what he did for the week. We were eating kind of quinoa and lentils and, you know, different stuff. And I thought, this is amazing. I'm totally into this.
Yeah. And so, I mean, do you think one of the reasons why, you know, you were kind of like taken in by all the food was that it was almost like you were looking at this cool dude and you were kind of like watching what he was doing and you wanted to emulate him in many ways?
Somewhat, but at the same time, there was already a shift had started before the marathon. So we were kind of on the path, and it was like he showed up and was like, oh, this is the next thing I want to do. Cool. Sign up, I'm a vegetarian. Yeah. This type of
so
thing.
So when you get the Skype call, oh no, this is pre-Skype. When you get the call from him in Vancouver saying he's a vegetarian, what's your immediate reaction?
Said, that's gas. I decided to be a vegetarian as well. You know, it was like the same week, same day, I think, probably. We were cloud computing long before Google. Yay! No, sorry. No, but I guess, I don't know, some kind of weird twin thing that we both decided the same thing. We didn't have mobile.
We were kind of on the same path anyway.
Yeah, the seeds were planted anyway, but that was how it kind of came out to play anyway.
Okay, so then, like, did you decide at that stage to come back from South Africa and Vancouver, respectively, and do something in Greystones?
No, I think it was more... Okay, you go for it. You're having fun. Yeah, great. Cool.
I think we spent the next couple of years, you know, quintessential Jack Kerouac, you know, on the road journey. You know, I'd hitchhike, or I went up tree planting up in northern Canada where we used to get a helicopter to work. That was with 50 born-again Christians, and I was kind of the lone wolf and the vegetarian. So I did that, and kind of, I think I planted about 40,000 trees, and then I'd earned a little bit of money, so I hitchhiked down to San Diego, where brother was, and ended up going to Burning Man, and then hitchhiking, staying in sustainable, organic, egalitarian, polyamorous community. You know, the quintessential hippie journey. And I guess through doing that, I found I was a lot more interested in food and community and kind of...
Going, yeah, brilliant.
Thanks.
Go, Steve.
Yeah, I was kind of losing momentum there.
You were doing okay there, though. And I was kind of the same kind of thing. We were both traveling around, kind of seeing how far you could push the health thing. You know, I remember...
Well, I guess, let me, you were talking there for a second.
Okay. So we went from vegetarian to vegan, you know, and I became vegan and then he became vegan and then it got into raw foodist and got into like fasting and cleansing and really wanted to see how far you could push the health thing, see if there was any destination, any correlation to how much coconut water you drank to how healthy you were. Like I remember going off in Costa Rica, I went off fasting for a week on the beach. I'd met this cool dude and told me, you got to fast, man, if you want to be like enlightened, man, you got to go fast. And I was like, okay, cool, fasting, brilliant. So I went out fasting for a week, and next day I signed up to 30-mile road race just to see if I could do it. And I thought I was going to win it, but I didn't. But I managed to do it. So it was really just we wanted to see how far we could push this health thing. Thank you.
Retrospective winner.
And I guess then out of the blue, Steve calls me up. He was living in France at the time, and he says, Dave, do you want to start this, like, do you want to start a health food revolution? Do you want to, like, try and get some kind of a movement going? And it was like, wow, brilliant idea, Steve, brilliant. And what's that going to be, Steve? What does that mean? And he said, you know the veg shop in Greystones? You know the one where Mom used to buy her vegetables? Do you want to see if your man will sell us a shop? I was like, well, we don't have any money, though, Steve. He's like, we figure that bit out. You know.
So was Greystones ready for your health food revolution?
I don't know.
We were up for it anyway.
It wasn't about the place being ready. We wanted it, you know, I don't know.
I guess we felt we'd something that we were so interested and passionate about, and we just wanted to share it with whoever the hell would listen.
Yeah,
and if you wouldn't listen, we'd paint the shop orange and we'd do silly things to try to get your attention and hopefully you'd listen then.
Okay, so you've opened the shop, and like, you know, the greengrocer selling veg in Greystones, that's fairly okay. I can see that. That ticks a box. You know, everyone needs to buy vegetables, so you're there, you're local boys.
Solid business plan. Solid. This is looking good.
Yeah, this is looking good, you know. Yeah. And then you decide to add a cafe.
Yeah.
Well, I guess...
I think it was...
Can I give more of a context with starting the veg shop? We wanted to... Initially, I wanted to start it as a charity, an NGO, because it was totally not about making money. It was about using business as a vehicle for social change. And I kind of wanted to create a happier, healthier world. And that was kind of it. We were total hippie idealists, you know, long hair. I had a top knot.
He wanted to call it Flinner's Fruit and Veg for Social Change. Genuinely, he did. That wasn't...
Yes. You weren't into that. You wouldn't buy that.
I thought it was a great idea, but I think someone told it. We came up with other names and ended up calling it the Happy Pair.
Bit of a safer bet.
Yeah. Okay. And then the letters wouldn't fit in the sign as well, you know.
All right. So, like, I mean, this was the initial idea then. It was like, I mean, it was almost like a quasi-social venture.
It wasn't quasi. It was totally social. Like, the start, he wanted to, he tried anarchy, you know. He was like, this was totally, we wanted to do things differently. And, I guess we really wanted to start as a revolution, but we realized with a greengrocer shop in a small town in Ireland, the main customers were kind of older ladies that were into carrots and turnips and cabbages, and there was busy moms. There was a lot of busy moms. And the older ladies, they weren't into revolution, and the moms were too busy. So it was like, okay, we got to sex this up a bit. So we opened up a juice bar, and suddenly lots of young people started coming in. It was like, oh, cool, this is happening, Steve. This is happening.
Right. So okay. So, so you're selling juices then? You know.
Yeah, it was like 2005. So there wasn't. I think it was the second juice bar in Ireland that was running Stephen's Green at the time, and that
was it. But word just began to spread because I mean, I remember when we started doing banter. First of all, we did a banter on food, and everyone said you've got to get the happy pair people in. This is like 2009, 2010. At that stage, though, the word was already spreading about you.
Yeah, I don't know.
We live in a bubble.
Yeah, we lived in a total bubble. And I guess at the start, we were just happy doing our thing. You know, the way we yeah, I don't know how to answer that one.
I'm curious.
We kind of started going on the road. Dave went and bought a horse box at one stage, and I kind of came back and I was like, what the hell is this? This, you know, looks interesting. What are we doing? And we painted up, we did up the horse box, and we turned it into a juice bar, and we took it to music festivals because young people are going to be there, and young people, you know, they drink too much and take too much drugs at festivals, and they need to eat fruit. You know, we were total, you know, ignorant.
Dreamers.
And we found out people like to get drunk and eat burgers and take drugs at festivals.
And then the next day when they're hungover, they like fruit.
But I remember the first one at... Where we were at Body...
It was Electric Picnic, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were at it. We had a pretty bad pitch. And if everyone knows, you know, retail, what are the three secrets to retail? You know, location. And we had a pretty crap pitch. And I was with a friend, Kev Cahill. And Kev's pretty out there. And we were kind of, you know, there was no one really going on. And Kev decided, ah, fuck, I have a great idea. And took off his clothes and put back on his apron. And I thought, geez, that's a great idea, Kev. So I kind of took off my clothes and put back on the apron, and someone had come up and they'd order, you know, can I have a strawberry sunrise? And they go, great, yeah. And you turn around and there's just a pair of cheeks in their face. And the queue got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
And then a guard joined the queue.
that's literally sexing up the business.
Well, sure,
having fun. It was very much having fun.
Having a laugh. You know,
and it wasn't at the start. It wasn't about making anyone vegetarian or vegan or anything. It was really trying to get some kind of movement to get people eating healthier. Like, we never called it vegetarian. It was never some kind of cult niche kind of thing. It was like, we were from Greystones, where we'd grown up, so it was very much trying to include
people. It's a small community. You don't want to exclude anyone. You know, you really need to include everyone.
So right from the start, that
was... Do you think, like, I mean, vegetarians still have... And vegetarian food still has a bad rep?
I think it's kind of shifting a little bit, but I think we try not to name it in any sense that it's not vegetarian or vegan, because it immediately...
Meat eaters go, I'm not a vegetarian.
What? I'm not a vegetarian. But then yet they ate porridge for breakfast and they ate vegetable soup for lunch. And it's like, that's actually a vegetarian meal. And... It's like a religious kind of thing. It's kind of pretty loaded.
Going back to all these kind of, like, I suppose, the music festival experience, you know, you weren't arrested for public indecency. You know, you go back to Greystones. Like, at what stage then do you decide, okay, we can do more than just sell juices here? We can expand the business here as well.
I think right from the start, like, we used to go to local schools to try and get them, like, during Healthy Eating Week, right from the first year, we were going to local schools trying to get them eating healthier. We were going to bridge clubs. We were going to everything, really trying to generate a movement. Like, right from the start, it wasn't about carrots 2 for 1, buy your carrots. You know, we really weren't measuring things in the typical financial sense.
All into the traditional kind of monetary thing. I remember you'd meet the accountant every year and you'd go up and she'd want to know, do you want to know much about the figures? Like, no.
No, I really don't. Because it's not going to be secret.
As long as, you know, there's not something drastic happening yet, let's sign them and let's off we go. You know, we measured the business in terms of kind of...
And it was... I got one in terms of this one.
Okay, great.
So I remember, like, during the winter, this is back when we had the veg shop and we had the cafe. Sorry, Jim, I like the story. So we had the veg shop and we had the cafe. And we used to, during winter, it was cold. The front door was open and so the wind used to whistle through and it was cold. And we used to cook porridge every morning for ourselves and for staff. And Sally was the manager at the time and she said, lads, why don't we just sell porridge? Like, you know, this is... We're a business. We should, you know, we should sell stuff. It's like, brilliant, Sally. Great thinking. That's the kind of thinking we need around here. And it was like, what are we going to charge? And I was like, oh, geez, I don't know. Maybe, like, we only open at 9 o'clock. It's Greystones. Everyone's eating their breakfast. Like, no one's going to want porridge. And Sally was like, they will. Come on, let's try it. So Steve was all right. Okay, well, let's just give it away for free for a week. Let's give it away for free for a week. And if people won't take it for free, they're definitely not going to pay for it. It's like, brilliant idea, Steve. Brilliant. So first week we gave it away and people would come in and they'd have their porridge and you give it to them for free and they'd go, free? Wow, thanks a million, really saying it. And it was a really nice kind of feeling, you know, there was a nice kind of reciprocity of energy or something, I don't know.
Big word, Dave.
I'm having a punt at it. But it gave you a nice kind of fuzzy feeling or whatever, that kind of felt like the payment. And it came to the end of the week and Sally was, all right, lads, we've been doing this for a week, what's the story? What are we charging? €2, €3, €4? And it was like, I don't know, like you were saying, maybe let's just give it away for free for one more week, just one more week and let's see what happens. And I guess that one more week has been about 7 years now, where we've just given away free porridge every day since we did it the first time. So it sounds like a crazy thing to do, you're giving something away for free, but it really generates goodwill.
Totally.
And we found it really, it's not that expensive to give away free porridge, but it's, I think it, people realise that you, you're genuinely...
It's looking at things differently and trying to make one, healthy eating accessible, and two, just...
Yeah, and also the fact is, like, I mean, you know, if the Happy Pair is giving away porridge, people kind of feel more positive towards you as well.
Absolutely.
Which means that when all the other ventures are coming down the track, and let's talk a bit about that, people are more willing to give it a chance. I mean, right now, you know, the Happy Pair is a serious concern. You know, you may try and joke about it, it's not. But there's a
no, but we got about 100 staff now, so
exactly.
Like,
so
in our team, so it's changed from me and him in a vegetable shop.
Yeah. So talk to us a bit about, like, when you make the decision to kind of, like, I suppose, ramp up. You know, in going back to your UCD business days, they'll talk about ramp up and scale up and move.
No conscious decision about scale up. Like, we started the business to create a happier, healthier world. It wasn't like a healthier, happier Greystone. So it's, you know, like, I guess we're
total dreamers.
We're dreamers, and we're, you know, we'll always dream ridiculously big. So it's like, we want to try to make as big a dent in the universe as we can. So I guess scale up was always, you know, we're kind of a bit, we suffer sometimes a bit from ADHD, and we kind of come up with a lot of ideas. And as a result, the business is, we do so many different things. Some of them better than others.
Have there been any ideas you've come up with that you've been counselled out of doing?
Should we could start a new business every day? I'd say no problem. Like, honestly, we could.
Give us an example of stuff you'd like me.
Rory, you'd have a good idea, Rory.
You know how crazy it is, and Sarah knows. Like, Sarah has to listen to all our ideas.
So, like, I mean, like, you know, the way you've built, up things before, you know, you've went for it. You give away porridge for free.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You took over Greystone Shop. So how do you decide which ideas are too crazy to be put into action?
You try one, and I guess people around you kind of go, that's fucking stupid.
No, you've gone too far there, lads. Yeah. Or else some of them require more energy and capital, and you kind of realise, okay, we're limited now, we can't do this one. That one's a pet project. That one's, you know, that one fits with the plan, you know, so...
Talk to us a little bit about the Super Value hookup, because I mean
that's
some of the people will know you from.
So that's our brother Dara. He's not here today.
He's a farmer, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he was the farmer.
He was the farmer. Now he's kind of like the brains behind the operation. I shouldn't say that, but he, you know, Dara. I guess Dara's our bro, kind of the younger brother. He's 6 years younger, and Dara's a bit like a priest.
He's in the nicest sense of the word,
that's what I mean. Yeah. But
he's the most,
to say priests aren't nice guys.
But in the sense that he's really pure and he's angelic and he's really lovely, like he's the nicest of a lot of us. Like, Dara
started out, you know, younger brother, he'd get all the crap jobs. Dara, would you do the bins? Or the KP called in six, Dara, would you wash the dishes? And you know, Dara was great, he always helped out. Dara studied what did he do? I think he did geography
or Trinity.
And he was really into farming. He was kind of pissed off that Ireland, we didn't grow much. We were good at growing cows and sheep and kind of cow's breast milk, but we weren't so good at growing vegetables. So he wanted to try to, you know, encourage kind of Irish people to grow more vegetables. And he was doing triathlons for Ireland at the time. And he kind of got really into wheatgrass and sprouts. It was kind of helping him recover quicker. And he found his times were getting better and he was performing better. So he thought, this is deadly. Maybe I'll try growing some at home for the shop. So he grew some at home for the shop, and there were some people buying it. Most people didn't know what the hell it was. But slowly it kind of got bigger and bigger, and then someone else asked, would he buy it? Would he sell it to another shop? And he sold another shop. And before he knew it, he was kind of supplying about 60 to 70 shops around Dublin, just mostly with wheatgrass and sprouts. And by sprouts, I don't mean Brussels sprouts. I kind of mean alfalfa or pea or fennel or fenugreek.
But where's this
radish.
Come back to Super Value? This is a pretty long road.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm taking the long way, the scenic route. Where are we going? Okay, so yes. And then Dara said, okay, Super Value Food Academy, they were kind of doing it with the Wicklow Enterprise Board. And I remember Dara said, I'm going to do that. And I said, Dara, feck that. Like, doing stuff for Wicklow County Council and, like, the supermarket. It's like, that's like playing with the enemy. You know the way? And Dara said, no, I'm going to do it. And Dara went and did it. And they were so supportive. They really kind of helped Dara teach him more about business and how to scale and how to kind of...
I guess we realised that it was really, and it enabled us to get healthy food to more people. And I guess
they were incredibly supportive, and even to date, they're remarkably supportive. I guess our products are now in about 300 shops, 200 Super Values, and they really, like, I guess as a food producer originally, your mind is kind of, supermarkets, they just squeeze you, they're just going to erode your margin, and they're just going to, like...
Squeeze the little guy, you know, that's the perception or
but
whatever.
They were really
found.
Supportive, and even to date,
we find them very supportive, because I think they're really, a priority for Super Value is health, and I guess they realize this.
Yeah, and like, I mean, also, like, if you build up an association with them, it means that other things you do down the road, they could be kind of rowing behind you. And I know one of the things that you talk about probably in the book as well is about, like, I mean, healthy eating when it comes to kids.
Trying
to encourage them to, like, me start eating healthier food earlier.
Yeah, we both have two kids, not together. two kids eat
separately.
Separately, yes, very separately, good.
Yeah. What age are they?
May five is five and Theo's three. Yeah, five and three, both surprisingly the same age.
But yeah, I guess I guess our kids know nothing else. They kind of are around healthy food all the time, but they still love crap.
And I guess like both of us would be eat a vegan diet. And I remember when the kids were young, it was no, they're definitely eating a vegan diet. None of this, not a chance. And I guess, you know, anyone who has kids, they kind of help round your edges, and you realize that it takes more than just one person to raise a child. It kind of takes a community. And when, you know, when my kids are with my mom and she wants to give them sausages, well, that's cool. You know, I used to eat sausages. So I guess it's encouraged us to be a little more, you know, a little
and
more...
And they eat great. They have really good health. They have really good attitudes to food, which I think is most important. You know, they'll try everything they eat. They eat really well. So it's not that they're vegetarian or vegan. That's not the major priority.
Let's go back to the kind of the happy pair of business then, lads. Yeah. And like, you know, you employ 100 people. So what's the current kind of like span of stuff you've got? You've obviously got the cafe. You know,
We've got two cafes. We have a shop. We have kind of an evening cafe. So we divide it into three things. There's the retail bits. That's the cafe and the shop and whatever. And then we've got the production and distribution. So we've got about 10 products that we distribute through Super Value.
And be the farm and the kind of production kitchens.
And then the other one is me and him, where we do events, or we do wrote the book and
kind of do YouTube stuff. So we do YouTube stuff for our own channel and for Jamie Oliver's team in the UK. I guess we do lots of corporate talks, and we do our Happy Heart course, and we do our online Happy Heart course.
So that's me and him. We're the two dancing monkeys. So that's
okay,
our
so
dance.
You've already kind of done a hookup with Jamie Oliver. I mean, is there talk about like me taking this happy pair bandwagon and rolling it out worldwide, going back to visit all those hippies you knew in Vancouver and South Africa?
Should be great. Yes, please.
But probably not this week.
Yeah,
it sounds great. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, right. You know, I guess we're big dreamers and wherever. Yeah, let's, you know, we're up for it.
But I guess, yeah, there's no plan B. Like, we're in this 100%. So we want to see how far we can push this thing in every sense of it, you know?
Well, I mean, it's already working. Because, I mean, anyone I know who lives in Greystones talks about the queues outside the Happy Pear at the weekend. People kind of hiking all the way up from Bray to go to the Happy Pear. You know? So it's like, you must be really happy to see the fact that your food philosophy when it comes to whole foods and healthy eating, it's like, it's been passed on.
Yeah, and I think the main thing is that it's not just food. Like, I think it's more a lifestyle and an attitude to life. Like, I think that's what it is. It's not trying to make anyone a vegetarian or a vegan or limit.
You keep saying that one.
But I'm really trying to... No, they say repetition is the thing. And I think I don't want to make people feel that they're not... It's not something that they can't achieve. It's just eating more vegetables. That's what our message has always been. And I think...
And have a laugh. And don't take it too serious.
You know, don't take things too serious and have a punt at it. Like, we've been doing this thing for 12 years and we're having a ball. It's even more fun than the day we started, you know.
I think that's a really good note to end on. Big round of applause, please, for Dave and Stephen from Happy Pair.
That's a million. Are we doing Q&A?
Can we do Q&A? I always think that's... Can we do Q&A? Can we do Q&A? Because often that's the best.
Can we do Q&A?
Q&A is
the most fun.
I guess you guys came here and we'd love to add any value we can.
Anyone got any questions?
And don't
be shy.
Dave, what's your favourite colour?
Pink. I like pink.
What's your favourite colour, Steve?
Purple.
Okay.
Blue. I'm going to go blue.
I have any questions. Just put your hand up.
Do we ever row? Fuck you, Steve.
language. It's children here.
Sorry. That was meant to be a joke. Excuse me. I'm a brute. But no, we don't. No, not anymore.
Okay.
No.
Hang on. Now, is there a question over here?
Party about 10.
This gentleman over here. Hang on.
Not so much a question. I just want to say respect your attitude and your... it's just brilliant the way that you vocalise your business.
Brilliant. Thanks a million. Cheers.
He's a bank manager.
Thank you, Mr. Bank Manager.
Any other questions? Oh, you're all very shy.
Come on, don't be afraid.
Yes.
Oh, here, hang on.
Are you just saying?
Just shout it out, we'll repeat it.
Ladies first.
How do we start getting into yoga? I remember, so we grew up, you know, playing rugby and we were total cavemen, stiff as planks. And I remember going away traveling, yoga. I kept meeting people that were doing yoga. And I was like, I don't want to do yoga. I'm not into yoga. Yoga's for pussies. You know, that was my programming or whatever. And I kept saying no. And then one day I just did it. And it was like, geez, this yoga stuff's deadly. And I guess we've been doing it for about 15 years, kind of consistently.
And it was really torturous the first time I did it. Downward dog was like the most painful thing. It was like being put
from
on a
years
torture
of rugby,
chair.
We were like stiff as planks, you know.
But slowly you do it more and more. And it gets, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it makes us feel good.
Anyone else want to play?
Any other questions? Are we covered all the bases?
Are we done?
I think we're done. Another big round of applause.
Thanks for coming.
And don't forget, The World of the Happy Pair is available from all good bookshops. It's also available from the smaller tent next door to us here. Huge thanks to the two of you for coming along. Really, really appreciate it.
thanks to David and Stephen for joining us at Bloom in the Phoenix Park, and thanks to Roz and all her team at Borbia for their hospitality and help with banter. The Bantercast series producer is Tanya White. Check out thisisbanter.com for news we're up to at banter, plus you can also listen back to all the banter podcasts to date. We'll be back in the Phoenix Park in June for Bloom 2017, so keep an eye on bloominthepark.com for details. We'll be back here next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.